Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. Today I'm going to be talking a little bit about Henry Kissinger and the period in American diplomacy and in world affairs that lasts from 1968 to about 1975, so that the period that encompasses Richard Nixon's term in office and that of also Gerald Ford. The late 60s and early 1970s represents something quite pivotal in world affairs during this period. It sees the meeting of a number of crises. The period begins with two enormous blows to the respective superpowers of the time, the United States and the USSR. The Tet Offensive in Vietnam in 1968, whilst it is defeated by the United States, it's still an enormous blow to American prestige, and the fact that it's broadcast on television screens every night, and you have North Vietnamese and Viet Minh fighters in the compound of the United States Embassy in Saigon, gives a fairly accurate view of the war to American families, and the view that they hold, with some degree of justification, is that America will never ever win. If after years of fighting the North Vietnamese are still willing to fight fanatically hard in order to liberate their country, the American public come to the conclusion that it's not a fight that can ever be won, or at such an unimaginable cost to America in lives and money that it's really not worth it. In 1968, the period where the West were in any way fooled that communism could be reformed, or particularly Western left-leaning intellectuals were in any way fooled or misled into the idea that communism could be reformed, comes to a crashing end with the Prague Spring in 1968. The decision by Brezhnev to roll in the tanks and put down the Czech pro-democracy movement is one that ends the vision that communism has anything progressive about it at all. The moment that tanks rolled into Czechoslovakia, 12 years after they had rolled into Budapest, was really, in many ways, the kind of the beginnings of the end of the communist argument, at least. What would remain throughout the 70s and 80s would simply be a failing totalitarian state with a large and unwieldy bureaucracy. The ideas that had sustained the Soviet Union and that had sustained it even under Stalin, that there was something progressive and a utopian future to which communism strove, were finally shattered, and the general support that communism had enjoyed from Western communist parties all but withers away. So you have these two fundamental moments for both superpowers where, you know, the emperor's new clothes are rather revealed. And later on in this period we're looking at, there are massive inflationary pressures. The dollar as the world's reserve currency comes under repeated pressure. The US economy is no longer really able to compete in a way that justifies the dollar as being as having its position within the Bretton Woods system that it once had. And also the Western world is put under immense pressure after 1973, or during and after 1973, as a result of the Yom Kippur War, the third Arab-Israeli conflict, where the Saudis and the rest of OPEC informed the Nixon presidency in Washington that it was time to leave the Arabs and the Israelis to sort out the continued existence, the issue of the continued existence of Israel between themselves. Israel was under such dire pressure at the time from Syria and Egypt, who both came very close to destroying Israel, that Nixon stepped in and armed Israel conventionally, as they had been asking for. Nixon famously said, this may be apocryphal, I don't know, that the AK-47 could not be seen to be defeating the M16. There is another reason, however, that America was keen to help the Israelis. The Israelis, by this point, had an atomic weapon, and had the Syrian and Egyptian armies finally made a breakthrough and marched for Tel Aviv, they would have used that. You know, there's little doubt that they would have used that nuclear weapon on Cairo or Damascus. Throughout this period, Henry Kissinger occupied two roles within the Nixon and then Ford administrations, as the National Security Advisor and then as Secretary of State. So in both instances he had a huge role to play in the shaping of American foreign policy. The conventional view of Nixon and Kissinger in this period, if we ignore the views that are wildly critical of both of them, and that is also a kind of fairly dominant view too, with some great degree of legitimacy when you look at the immense bloodshed in Indochina throughout the period. But the traditional, less partisan view of Nixon and Kissinger is that they were the architects of a diplomatic revolution in the early 1970s. They in essence found a world in chaos, a Cold War which is in deadlock, an intractable war in Vietnam, and they left a world where the Cold War was able to be, to the tensions of the Cold War were reduced. Nixon had visited both Beijing and Moscow, and America had its exit strategy from Vietnam. And I suppose the sympathetic view of Kissinger is that whilst he may have been a villain, he was a villain who understood realpolitik, who understood the realities of diplomacy, and was able to use them to extend American interests and reduce Cold War tensions. Those who make a good case for Nixon particularly say that were it not for the Watergate scandal derailing his administration and his legacy, he would be hailed as one of the greatest American presidents, particularly in the diplomatic and foreign policy fields. But there is another story to tell about these years, and it really revolves around Kissinger himself. Kissinger, firstly as the National Security Advisor and then Secretary of State, was very good at centralising power for himself. He was able to force professional diplomats, foreign policy analysts, and other essential professionals out of the State Department and reorganise the committees of the National Security Council so as to be make himself the sole font of all knowledge. He's very much a, kind of like a Cardinal Wolsey type of character for the 1960s and 70s. And the problem that this throws up, it creates a very bloody problem for parts of the world such as East Timor and Cambodia, is that Kissinger is able to make enormous, long-lasting, significant foreign policy decisions without very much oversight. He has so much knowledge centralised that he is virtually unassailable by the institutions of Congress and the Senate that would normally have oversight over his realm. There is a school of thought about Kissinger in this period that rather mirrors the kind of the thinking about Hitler's decision making. Now, I'm not going to be doing one of these ahistorical arguments of trying to compare someone to Hitler. That's not what I'm saying. The point I'm going to make is that Kissinger was thought to have a long-term strategic vision, just as Hitler was thought to have by many a long-term vision for the war, for his treatment of the Jews, and so on and so forth. Whereas both figures are far more, there's far more evidence to suggest that both Kissinger and Hitler were far more impulsive, far more last minute, far more seat of the pants, if you will, and they made a policy on the spur. And it's interesting that this theory about well-known, significant figures of the 20th century comes up time and time again. You know, they must have had a master plan. And that's got more to do with how we see things than any reality that we're projecting onto the past. Some argue that Kissinger's decision to ignore his foreign policy advisers was quite justified. I mean, after all, these are the foreign policy advisers that had advised successive presidents very badly when it came to the subject of Vietnam, and had made cases for war where really robust diplomacy would have served both Indochina and the United States far better. Being able to exit Vietnam was the key matter on which Nixon's presidency rested. His election pledge in 1968 of peace with honour, being able to withdraw without humiliation, was something that would be non-negotiable in his dealings with the American people. He would not forgive any failure in this particular regard. And so leaving it to the advisers who had made so many errors in the past and who frankly had not a clue about what to do and about how to extricate America was not something Nixon was going to be inclined to do, and looked to fresh blood, looked to an original, or supposedly original.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
An innovative thinker like Kissinger, who he was happy to fate with a great deal of power, influence and autonomy. In return for the kind of delivery of an exit strategy that would ensure Nixon's presidency continued. The ability to have no oversight meant that Nixon could behave in ways that were far more clandestine, such as the secret bombing of Cambodia in 1970. And the strategy for removing congressional oversight was clearly thought out, clearly mapped between Nixon and Kissinger. Kissinger's secrecy had all sorts of other unintended effects. The resumption of good relations between China and America shocked Japan. The Japanese had no idea that this was in the pipeline. The Japanese had were traditionally very suspicious, very fearful of a large, militant and now nuclear-armed China, and had the American embassy in Tokyo had no idea that Kissinger was arranging a visit for Nixon to China. The diplomatic staff that Nixon had around him were often in the dark about various initiatives. And this led Kissinger to be able to take the lead on negotiating, where often more junior members of his staff would be involved. So he was a top-down micromanager. But also, he took the lead on negotiating where Nixon himself was clearly disinterested. Key initiatives, such as the SALT I talks, the Strategic Arms Limitation talks, in 1970, fell to Kissinger to carry out, as Nixon didn't seem to be engaged with it at all. A former CIA man who wrote an account of this period of time and who had a great deal of experience in the State Department, William Bundy, wrote of the SALT talks in 1970, "It was hardly the way to conduct a major negotiation. A president not really interested, his principal assistant, Kissinger, intervening without the knowledge or the concurrence of the negotiating team, and the team left to fend for itself." Bundy later writes, "Kissinger had left many loose ends, another sloppy negotiating performance." So Kissinger is not, in Bundy's view, the kind of clinician, the kind of foreign policy mastermind that he is, he's portrayed as being. Now, if you were writing an essay about this, and you were writing an essay about American diplomacy throughout the period, it's very easy to rely too much on Kissinger and to rely too much on the myth of Kissinger as an explanation for the exit strategy from Vietnam, détente with China, détente with Russia. I mean, he was involved in all these things, and he does have significant importance. But it should be a different perspective on Kissinger will really flesh out your argument or really give another view of things. And I think it's important to bring these kind of titanic figures down to the feet of clay that they all have, you know, inevitably as human beings, that they all have. It prevents us from over-mythologizing. Now, both men do have a penchant for conspiracy, and they are obsessed with centralising knowledge and power. But by doing that, they actually become less effective. Had they shared with their various staffs what they were doing, much of their negotiating may well have been more effective. Nixon seems to be disinterested in negotiations in general, and Kissinger is fascinated by the process of negotiation. When it comes to the topic of Cambodia, the authorization of 3,600 B-52 raids against what was thought to be a series of Viet Cong bases in Cambodia, operating across the border into the south, leaves a kind of a disastrous legacy, not just of the horrific damage done through the bombing, but also the resultant development of the Khmer Rouge, which senior Khmer Rouge commanders were quite candid afterwards. They were quite explicit in saying that it was the bombing that made them able to take over the country. Prior to that, they are this kind of eccentric fringe movement of Maoist guerrillas. Thereafter, they're a mass movement. In 1974, it was directly attributable to the rise of the Khmer Rouge, and it was directly attributable to the secretive behaviour of both Nixon and Kissinger is directly responsible. The point that Bundy makes about this is this. He says, General Vogt, the commander of the US 7th Air Force, and most of the senior civilians involved, including Ambassador Swank, believe that the bombing kept Lon Nol afloat in the face of the 1973 Khmer Rouge offensive. It may have been crucial in enabling the government forces using artillery to hold their central enclave, including Phnom Penh, into 1974 and eventually into the early spring of 1975. Massive air power used against a lightly armed attacking force with no anti-aircraft capability could be effective in preventing victory for the opposing force. On the other hand, the intensity of the bombing, as a matter of common sense judgment shared by many objective observers, drove the Khmer Rouge to greater military efforts. It also made the more self-reliant, more separate from North Vietnam, more alienated from Sihanouk, and altogether less subject to influence from any of their communist supporters. This is the Khmer Rouge. So it made for the... It helped to radicalise the Khmer Rouge. The bombing surely made it more rather than less difficult for any party to persuade the Khmer Rouge to accept a ceasefire and to negotiate a political compromise, which was the stated objective. The chances of such a change, of course, by the Khmer Rouge were almost certainly slim already. A determined negotiating effort to enlist Sihanouk, this is Prince Sihanouk, the ruler of Cambodia, combined with a much more limited programme of bombing to keep the threat alive, might just have stood a chance. As it was, intense bombing with no negotiated effort, until the Khmer Rouge was even more embittered, was the worst of all worlds. As throughout the American involvement in Cambodia, the policy miscalculations alone, apart from eventual congressional reactions, were monumental. They must be laid squarely at the door of Nixon and his two principal advisers, Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger. A far less well-publicised and yet equally as bloody foreign policy disaster began in March 1971, when the Pakistani dictator Yahya Khan violently suppressed riots in East Pakistan, subsequently which became Bangladesh. Millions of refugees fled into India, and tension mounted all year round until in December, when the Pakistanis dispatched large numbers of troops to quell discontent in East Pakistan. Fighting breaks out between India and Pakistan on the northwest frontier, on India's northwest frontier. This lasted for a few weeks until the Pakistani forces were surrounded and surrendered and withdrew. And East Pakistan then declares its independence as Bangladesh, leaving a defeated and humiliated and much reduced Pakistani state. throughout this crisis, it was the United States' position to support Yahya Khan, a violent, brutal autocrat, a dictator. And it's questionable, it's hard to see at first glance what America, what their possible advantage could be in this. And the answer's simple. Pakistan was being armed by China, was seen as a client state of China and a good friend of China, and it had been through Pakistan that Kissinger's back channels to China had first been established. And status of India in the Cold War was far more ambiguous. Nehru, during his lifetime, had steered India perilously close to a relationship of sorts with India, with the Soviet Union, and India still in the 1970s had distinct Soviet sympathies. Kissinger breezily dismissed the conduct of Yahya Khan by saying, well, you know, it's really none of our business how they conduct their domestic affairs. But the statistics vary wildly as to how many people were killed in East Pakistan. The most credible modest and moderate figures suggest something like about 300,000, but upper limits suggest possibly 3 million. And certainly there is a recognised genocide took place during the last days of Pakistani rule over the Bengalis. So I suppose in the final analysis, there does appear to be a relationship between this secretiveness, a centralisation of power, centralisation of decision-making, and the ability of these two pivotal Cold War figures, Nixon and Kissinger, to be able to make arbitrary foreign policy decisions which have catastrophic consequences far, far away from Washington, D.C. And yet, also, decisions taken by them do appear to have had some considerable impact on reducing Cold War tensions overall. The Explaining History series is expanding pretty soon. We've got a new ebook by Tyrell Eskelson coming out, The American Century. We're just waiting for that to hit the digital shelves. And also new additions to the Explaining History series. We're launching a new series of ebooks in January called Study Essentials, which are designed to give students the very basics in a very thorough way on issues such as the Paris Peace Conference and the Russian Revolution of 1917. So keep your eye out for those, and I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thank you much. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.